I call the November 7th, 2023 Committee of the Whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
7:01, Member Warren is absent. Member Colby?
Here.
Member Schneider?
Here.
Member Spector?
Here.
Chair Spain?
Here. Okay, so I see that we do have one member from the public. So it's our practice not to address questions at this time, but we will take comments under advisement. Looks like you'd like to make a verbal comment. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Well, thank you so much for everything you guys do for the Glencoe Beach. It's a crown jewel of the community. You guys are doing a great job to maintain it and keep it up. What I want to talk about today, I know you're going to be talking about weekend policy around beach passes versus day, season passes versus day passes. And what I want to do is kind of help frame the discussion around, it's really, in my mind, the issue is around density, right? How crowded is too crowded a beach? Unfortunately, TripAdvisor did a survey, a worldwide survey, asked a question around the world, and the answer that came back was, for Western Europe and North America, a 6-foot radius, anything less than that was too crowded. For the rest of the world, it was 3 feet, which reflects cultural norms around personal space. So a 6-foot radius, if you take a human being, which takes about a foot and a half circle, out from there, 6 feet, that's about 144 square feet. And, you know, do the math, for the Glencoe Beach, which is 25,000 square feet, on the peak days, which is really what we're talking about on the weekends, those 12 weekend days when it's over 80, it's sunny, and the beach is open, a capacity, not to exceed capacity, would be somewhere between 5 and 550 people. And, you know, your policy today, which was developed for COVID, for social distancing, but it also does a pretty good job in terms of kind of staying around that level. And the numbers that I saw for those 12 days last year, and it's the same last 2 years, the number of attendance was somewhere between 500 to 700. So it was kind of managing that, you know, getting to a point but not exceeding the too crowded level. Prior to COVID, and I know this as a former commissioner, I saw the numbers, my kids worked here, on those same 12 days, the beach would get 1,200 to sometimes 1,500 people on the beach. It was way too crowded. As a commissioner, I would get all kinds of complaints about how it's too crowded. And it's not who the people are there, just nobody wants folks on top of them. That's kind of the culture norm of the community. And as a result, what happened was that residents did not buy season passes, and so your revenue model was completely dependent on those dozens of weekend days. And my kids at work were saying it was out of control. It was a mess. It was a swim area full of people, and not safe. The beach full of people. It was not really a pleasant thing, you know. I think, you know, it wasn't intended when the policy changed since COVID, but it had the byproduct effect of increasing the beach experience for the people, the patrons, and the residents, and the numbers of resident passes and resident visits actually doubled since pre-COVID. So I think, in my mind, you know. And so the other question is, what about the people who don't, you know, have season passes? Well, your policy does not discriminate between residents and non-residents. Anybody could buy a season pass, and you could even buy them right there the day of the, you know, when they're on site. But for those folks who don't have it and want to go somewhere, there's all kinds of options up and down the North Shore that they have day passes. There's aquatic centers, there's inland lakes. And with Wilmette even has Langdon Beach, which is a 10-minute drive south of Glencoe Beach. Free beach, gorgeous, beautiful. You can swim there, and you have non-restricted parking a block west of Sheridan Road. So, you know, in my mind, I think the most important thing, as you discuss, is start with the premise of saying how crowded is too crowded beach before you start to kind of make recommendations on what the park, what staff's policy is around day passes versus passes on Saturday. Ask the question for those 12 days when you're trying to manage peak density. What is your density standard? Is it 6 feet per person, or is it 3 feet per person, or somewhere else? And I think by doing that, it provides a little bit of clarity. So anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, thank you for all your support on the beach, for your programs, for all the work you're doing, for all the money you're investing. Thank you so much. And the staff who did a great job this year, hands up to them. So anyway, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much. Okay, next item on the agenda is the Weinberg Family Recreation Center. First time I think I get to say that in these meetings. Mickleball here at presentation, so Bobby and Adam.
Evening, commissioners. Myself and Adam are going to just review the operation of the pickleball courts that were installed at the Weinberg Family Recreation Center this May. As you know, they went in, it was really the first dedicated pickleball courts added in the district. So what we said at the time was we were going to collect as much data as we could, get feedback, make adjustments as necessary, and bring that data back to the board to review as we start planning for next year. So we're just going to just recap the timeline, go through the operation review, talk a little bit about the data, the small amount of data we're able to capture, some feedback, and then move it forward. So you might remember pickleball kind of exploded on the scene in fall 2019. It was big before that, but it really exploded in Glenmore around that time. We added some hybrid courts at the Watts tennis courts. We started offering pickleball classes. We were starting to see demand really peak. And then in summer 2020, obviously, we had COVID. We started discussions about the lakefront tennis courts as part of a 3-year capital plan. We started some community engagement. And then in the winter of 2021, we held further focus groups for lakefront tennis courts. Then in the summer of 2022, the board discussed adding pickleball courts on the main rink at Watts, and then we obviously installed them in the spring of 2023, around the beginning of May. So it seemed to be very successful so far. Adam's just going to review how we actually managed that.
So as we discussed last spring before we installed the courts, we kind of have two different areas of usage, our GPD programming and kind of the public usage. So it opens 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The APM is in line with the ordinance as passed for those courts. In the community, we put 6 courts on, 2 are available for reserve, advanced reservations, the other 4 are available for free play. If there aren't advanced reservations, the other 2 are also available for free play. Priorities go to district programming, school district programming, advanced reservation, and or lessons, and then any free play as it goes on. As far as advanced reservations go, residents have priority of 7 days in advance, and then non-residents have the 3 days. We ran programming 3 days a week, mostly with Carl Rosenthal, and then Lake Sport Athletics also ran some match play classes. See what those took out, really, that midday, 10 a.m. to 3 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then Game On Camp, they used it while they're over at Watts, or at South for the first half of the summer.
Weinberg.
As far as court reservations go, we had about 274 reservations made. As we see, overwhelmingly, residents made those reservations for 319 total hours. Just on these courts alone, we made just over $5,000 in passive revenue. As far as program data goes, so we mostly run our classes outdoors on the ice rink or at the Watts Park tennis courts at the time. And when the weather is cooperative, we're up over 3 courts in the gymnasium. As you can see, we've had really strong enrollment in the program. 683 of 980. And then if you look over the breakdown, again, over 80% are going to residents. As far as feedback goes, we worked with them to get a QR code put out on the ice rink. Feedback, we had 18 responses, overwhelmingly positive. We had one that was 1-star with no feedback and comments, and then one that was a 3-star, and then the was one of the lights on. Additional feedback we had was expanding them up when the lights are on, you know, continue to add signage related to when the lights are on, and obviously just overwhelmingly positive how meeting the courts were. Some of the challenges we did see were obviously people wanting the lights on, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, which obviously isn't helpful with our neighbors. Some of Kyle's team did an awesome job was adjusting those dividers, putting in those nice nets, which were really well received. Staying water is an issue, but that is part of why we decided to go with the product we had, is that some of that water can sit underneath those tiles. But those participants and players that are more at the more competitive side, had an issue with that. But what we did, we worked with Carl and our instructors to provide shop back so they could at least try to get the courts as best they could. It wasn't perfect. Similar to any of our other tennis courts, we're not pumping water off tennis courts. We're not anymore pumping water off of baseball fields. So kind of that same concept with these courts. As we talked about with improvements, we did install light timers so they'd go on about 30 minutes before dusk, and then they'd go off at 8 o'clock. Put the new net dividers, and then I think something moving next year we'll be looking at shade options. That was one of the kind of the other challenges we saw. It can get hot on the ice rink, but it's 90 degrees. As far as recommendations go, we recommend keeping and maintaining our current operation with no significant changes. Utilize that exterior bathroom when it returns once the renovation is done.
We did have some discussion about using the building. Obviously, with opening up a brand new rec center, there would be additional costs associated with that. There is currently not staffing it, and having it open to the community with secure programming, that provides challenges that we would recommend in this kind of environment, having staff dedicated to that. That would add additional costs that would either be absorbed in the district or would have to be added on additional fees for using those courts. We were very much open to present to the board and get any feedback you may have heard from the community or what your thoughts are on as we plan for next summer. As we go through the budgeting process, we would be looking to do that now.
I've heard great feedback. Everyone seems really happy to have more pickleball courts. Kind of a question. I know that for kids club, they ice skate during the winter. Is there any plan with when the Weinberg Center opens to an after-school pickleball activity for the kids?
We did run a youth class this year. It was ran out here, but I think we'll look at, to your point, running it over there similar to we do other outdoor sports and stuff. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it's with? Like, I know they have programs, and it's just right there.
They can pick up where they can just go play and be supervised.
Yeah, something like that.
We could look at that for sure. That would be a really nice opportunity for those kids.
Yeah, it could mix it up a little bit.
We'll look at the availability of the courts, maybe like ice skating. Yeah. We'll say, hey, for this month we'll do it on Wednesdays or Tuesdays. Whatever. We can look at that. That's a good idea. Additional feedback?
I think this is a great success. I mean, we came up with this plan a year ago, and it was a solution that was very creative. We weren't sure how people would feel about this surface, and it turned out to be a great success. So, great work. I'm really excited that we did this.
So just to clarify our plan for next year when the building is open to the public again, if you were to walk up to the Weinberg Family Recreation Center, on the right there's a gate. What our initial plan right now is to keep that open so you could walk through to the runway so you're not going through the building.
Is that where the straight to
similar to the Cove Ring?
Yes, correct.
Similar to where open the Cove Ring, where you did have the building open, you go to the outside gate.
So as you approach, there's two bathrooms with exterior doors on the left hand side. One of those will likely be open to the community from the outside and secured to the building on the inside. So we only have one bathroom available. We may and have had some suggestions from community members about having access to that building, but again, there will be significant additional cost to do that given that's a 7-day-a-week operation and we don't have full-time staff. So we just want to make sure the board fully understood that. Again, we can monitor and adjust, but we don't have money budgeted for it. We're probably not going to do that next summer.
Would there be potential for somebody to pay to have somebody there to use the building? Like, let's say they had a pickleball party.
I think there's options for that.
Yeah, because we could do that where maybe they can utilize a rec room on a Saturday and, you know, have a birthday party or instruction party type thing. Yeah.
We want to avoid that the center is open to anyone who wants to go in there and it's on supervised.
It was really nice to see that the significant majority of people using those courts are from Glencoe. And before we get the courts, I remember talking to people after meetings, and they were going to Glenview and other places using their courts. And I thought, oh no, when we open our courts, are they going to come here? And it's nice that some come, but it's primarily Glencoe residents, which is, you know, the great courts. And we'll get to the benefit of that. So, yeah, good. Any comments on, like, how would you do the shade? Is it some sort of awning?
That would be to put picnic tables with umbrellas, probably on the wrong way. There might be some space inside to keep it for safety reasons, keep it off of the surface.
It wouldn't be shade over the courts. It would be shade
waiting to play the
beat.
Okay,
so that's correct.
Yeah, so pretty manageable, where it's on the side of the courts, on the ring courts, actually on the runway. We also have that dedicated seating area that was part of the initial 100,000 donation, so that gathering plaza. So we look that, we're not looking to install any crazy shapes.
How bad is the water?
I would say if you have a heavy rain, you're talking 2 days before you can start using it.
Well, portion of it. There might be two or three courts that are ready within 24 hours to be played. There's just a differing opinion on playability on it.
Some of that's coming from our contractor, our instructor, who has played multiple courts, has very high expectations, and again, these were put in as recreational play, trying to keep our operating expenses as low as possible with them. So it's not realistic to think we're going to have staff to go out and, you know, shop back six a large space anytime it rains.
And that would happen on a tennis court or any other surface. Yeah. Is there something unique about this that traps the water? Is that the problem?
It's an ice rink, so you don't have...
It's not pitched.
Yeah. Right. You actually probably have it the opposite of pitched, because you need the water to cool up to freeze for the winter. So it's...
Mm. Interesting. Nice to retain water in that.
Yeah.
Basketball courts, baseball fields, you just can't.
But those are designed... Basketball courts and tennis courts, I presume, are designed to drain water to the side during the normal course of nature's activities.
Right.
This is not.
It's spring and fall. So
same as a baseball field.
Yeah.
Right.
Spring and fall when the temperature of the slab isn't up. So in the middle of the summer when it goes up to 80 degrees straight out, that happens quickly. It's spring when it's the rainy season. Or the last couple of weeks of in October when it's regularly raining. But 95% of the time, it did exactly what we were hoping. We got a lot of play.
Good. Sounds like it's a success. Where are you storing the materials now?
So we actually purchased a storage container, one of those
pods.
Nice storage containers back at Parkstar. So the courts were stacked on the pallets and actually put away. So we'll sit there for the winter and create some
spring. Nice.
Okay, any other comments? Otherwise, I think we have you guys are presenting the link for the report next.
Nice job.
Great, so we're just going to pivot now to a similar kind of review of the lakefront operation for 2023. So we're going to talk about just a review of the season information, staff and training, facility improvements, some of the operations overview, beach programming survey results, the financials of the operation, and then we're going to discuss, open up to the board for discussions on path and daily fee options, the Northbrook Intergovernmental Agreements, and then discussion about some complementary passes within the community for some other institutions. So again, very similar to previous years, we are at similar calendar of opening days. It's
Memorial Day to Labor Day for the swimming beach, and then into kind of early October for the boating beach. It was a season pass and daily admissions like previous years. We didn't have any major changes there for this year. In terms of staffing, we had 62 seasonal staff this year, up from about 55. So you'll see in some of the expenses on the part-time labor, it was up because we were actually able to attract more staff this year. Our staff go through some pretty rigorous training from lifeguards, cashiers, boat staff, and camp staff. And that all happens before the season, at the start of the season, and then during in-services, during regular operation. As I just talked to on some of the seasonal labor expenses, I put down here on the bottom, 2019 to 2023, it was a 58% increase in minimum wage. And that's pretty important to give that context, because COVID really it skews the numbers in terms of what the operation looked like. So there's a couple of things we've noticed. Lifeguards has stayed pretty consistent because we've done a good job with matching the numbers as our operation, and the numbers of visitors were down slightly before COVID. We're seeing additional expenses in our cashiers as well, additional to manage some of the flows of people with passes and processing. And then we had additional expenses with some more senior leadership staff at the beach, so part-time, so operational managers. We had a John bring in this year, he was a great addition to complement when we didn't have our facility manager there. So we are continuing to see that wage pressure, but the 58% increase in minimum wage, I think we're at a 52% increase since 2019, so we're right in line with that. But we have made some operational improvements in terms of operating hours, of when we're staffing, so we've been managing that, but we are continuing to see the pressures of the boardrooms. On the boat side, you'll see a big jump this year, about $10,000. That's because we were actually able to attract some boat guards. We were really struggling last year. But if you look into 2019, we're about in line. Again, we made some adjustments to our operating hours. We were watching when are boaters coming down, when are they checking in, when are they going out, and we reduced staff and operating hours to line up with that and make sure we had staff when boaters wanted to sail. So the times in the fall when it was nice, later in August when we could, if it was nice days, making sure that was. So we were managing our resources there. In terms of facility improvements, I won't go into too much detail. As you know, the Bluff Stabilization Project is just about to finish up in the next couple of weeks here. They did finish the window restoration and install in the beach house. They look amazing. Excuse me. We coordinated with the village on the stormwater project, which was a huge success. That really reduced the amount of erosion we saw at the boating beach this summer. That took behind the lockers and is on the very north end of the boating beach. The pier railings were repainted, and then we reutilized the concession area for a snack shack this summer.
So beach programming, this is an area I think we have a lot of room for growth. I'm really excited with our new ice rink and beach manager, Shane Stevens, our background coming from the programming side, to really have focus on high quality programming and be able to expand in a lot of different areas. So our beach programming is made up of a quantity sailing camp, our sailing class, and then variety of fitness classes that operate out of the beach. So you can see aquatic and sailing numbers. One thing to note, in 2022 we transitioned to full day aquatic and sailing camp, so that obviously had an effect on our number of enrollment, but really kept obviously our revenue streams and expenses in line. So we're continuing to see that remain steady and strong. Like I said, with Shannon's experience in camp, I think we're going to have a good impact there, which will get provide some additional structure, but also the ability to be able to guide the staff to hopefully grow the program. Sailing classes, obviously we saw a nice uptick here. That we do recognize there's an opportunity for some improvement in qualified staff while also expanding the number of classes we offer, communication, and so on. Special events continue to be popular, obviously our family camp out. We had 350 plus participants. We had our first fellow stable event with 50 plus people with, you know, fine dining experience down on the trellis. Cardboard Regatta, the Gordon's sisters there, I think they've won it 3 years running. Continue to have their Taylor Swift themed boat this year. thickness, and you have about 12 booths, and then Beach Safe continues to be a popular thing. We're looking forward to hopefully expanding that and its reach and within our camp program and seeing if we can improve that interaction with that season passes, as we talked about, a lot of access 7 days a week, required to visit the beach on weekends and holidays. And then beach passes, a lot of access before 12 p.m. on weekdays. Past demographics, almost 60% are Glencoe residents, with Northbrook residents making up 23% and 18%. As far as the pass age breakdown goes, it's really in line with the families, so you're having, you know, kind of that age cohort of parents, and with the kids that are under 18 is really where we're seeing. So 45 plus percent. As far as pass sales go, we're just continuing to come back down to that mean. So obviously we saw a dip compared to the last 2 years, but we continue to see that number kind of fluctuate and expect it to be in that, if we continue this model, be in that, you know, 5,000 plus range of passes per season. As far as daily admission goes, we see the trend here. You know, obviously we've made that shift from doing daily admission model, or as well, daily admission 7 days a week, to a pass holder model, and see how that kind of inverted, looking at those two things. But still staying right in line with number of visits and amount of revenue. As far as annual attendance goes, again, pre-COVID, we had 21,000 total visits to the beach. This past year we had 20,000, and that's in line with how it's historically been over the last 10 or so years, is that kind of 20,000 range. As far as average visits by day, this is really dependent upon weather, as far as which day is going to be popular, but weekends continue to be heavy. We saw a little bit of uptick there. We did have a few really warm weather days, especially towards the end of the season on weekends. As far as the average pass per visit, we saw that number creep back up, and this number is really important when it comes to kind of that break even for visits with the pass. So being right around 3, or about 3.5 right now, to get your cost recovery on your pass for a resident and a non-resident. So we're creeping up back towards that number on average, about 2.86 passive visits.
Sorry, to recover it, what is the break-even on a resident pass? Is it 3 visits?
3.5 visits.
So most residents aren't breaking even. The average resident's not breaking even.
Correct.
But it's pass holder only during certain times, right? So
they're not buying a...
So you can't buy a daily pass during certain days, of the like weekends, right?
Weekends or before weekdays.
So I think that changes your calculus. I mean, maybe you're not getting your...
Right, you
exact fee return, but you're getting access to
yeah,
a certain time.
Exactly.
You're paying for that.
Yeah.
One data point. Just one thing that is kind of a KPI that we look at to make sure that people are getting value. Because when they do that value proposition, they're like, well, I only went one time, they're not going to buy a pass. Versus, hey, I went 3 times. At least I broke even and I got access on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. My hunch is that if you broke that average pass visit up, the 2.86, my hunch is about 2.3 of them are on days that you couldn't go otherwise, and like 0.5 would be on days where you actually could have probably bought a pass.
So we can do a little bit deeper of a dive when we get into some of the discussion on the pass models.
Bart, were you going to say something?
there's an option value in the pass where you'll get into it in terms of bad weather, stroke, whatever, so people couldn't go as much, but they know if there's good weather, they can always go down there.
Right.
So,
that's
pretty long.
When we see our pass holders really only down there for about 90 minutes to 120, they're not staying there for 6 to 8 hours, typically speaking. So they might be visiting more frequently, but not for long time. It's maybe a daily admission person. So annually, obviously, new chairs and umbrella rentals, new sun shelters and trellis, those numbers continue to obviously stay kind of par with where they've been for the last 5 seasons. Both kayak and paddleboard rentals are heavily dependent on weather, obviously, especially with the water aspect and, you know, which way waves are coming in, it will dictate that, a little bit of staffing as well.
So just looking at the boathouse operation, again, it's very similar to previous years. No major changes there. We did do a big project of going through the wait list for storage this last winter, previous winter, and we were actually able to get through a pretty significant number, I think like 25 people off the wait list, and we rebalanced a little bit based on who was on the wait list, because people had to figure out how to try to skip ahead. So we just list a little bit of a shift there to slightly more kayaks and paddle boards to Hobies. As you know, the challenge down there is shore space. We have rack space restrictions, but really it's the shore space and having enough space for all those boats and kayaks and paddle boards on a busy Saturday or Sunday. So we're right on par with the total number. We'll go through the waitlist again. We're likely going to move that to a digital waitlist where people can do that through our registration software. So it's a lot more transparent. And that will be a project we'll look at over the next couple of months. Storage, you saw a nice little bump there in revenue. That was got to do with price increases based on the budget price increase, but also we reduced the discount for additional craft. So that went down from 50% to 35%. So we'll also probably look to bring that down again to incentivize people who don't necessarily use all their boats or equipment to give them up to somebody else. So, in terms of closures, go back to what Adam talked about. We have a large number of northeast wave events. So, what happens there is big rolling waves come in and close the water, make it hard to rent paddle boards, make it hard to swim. So, unproportional to previous years, we had a lot of closures to the water, which impacted attendance, obviously. It's interesting that high bacteria was only 3 days. It was at the 4th of July weekend, unfortunately, but just interesting that previously and this year was only 3. So I'm not sure the rhyme or reason, but it's good to track the data. In terms of the overall financials for the beach house, as we talked about this summer, beach pass has reverted to that pre-COVID mean. We're hopefully going to break even. The financials look pretty good. We did a good job of managing our expenses when the weather wasn't good. So we'd be close to budget, behind it, but close. In terms of the boathouse, we had those additional expenses for labor. It is worth noting that large jump in the operating expenses has got to do with some fixed cost changes. So this year we had the comprehensive plan, which just comes out of the beach kind of directly through G&A. We also had health insurance come out for the beach manager that previously was a small amount. So those impacted the financials this year as kind of fixed costs rather than those marginal costs due to seasonal labor. And we did know that going into it and had budgeted for that. Overall, what we do every year is the board knows the beach operation, the boat operation, the beach programs, and their kind of net positions and put them all together as one operation to see where we ended up. So beach programs were a large revenue contributor because they don't pay a lot of fixed costs. They pay for labor, direct costs, not a lot of indirect. So we had them all together. The beach overall looked like it had a pretty good year. Obviously COVID in 2022 and 2021 were bumper years because so many beach pass sales.
So annually we do our survey. This year we have 166 responses. Just note only is surveying our beach pass holders. We'll be sent out to obviously anybody on that. As far as overall satisfaction with their experience at the beach, again, note, as we've said in some of our other, we did add that fifth data point, so the very good was added into this survey as well. So obviously those numbers are going to be adjusted a little bit. Again, we're at about just under 90% overall satisfaction is good to excellent. As far as value of the beach pass, continues to be hovering right around that kind of 85% to 90% range that they find it to be a good or better value. As far as amenities go, so it's looking up and down it, obviously restrooms, parking, spray grounds, sun shelters, chairs and umbrellas, boat rentals, and beach cart. Again, very few bad experiences as far as utilizing those amendments. And people did have the option to say not applicable on these amendments, but they did not use them. As far as the beach staff and their obviously evaluation feedback related to that, you can see across the board, and people felt very safe down there. Felt like the staff was responsive, attended to their needs. And given, you know, what beach house restrooms tend to be, again, you know, 92% said they were good or better. So I think that's a kudos to our staff on keeping those clean.
So as we start to go through the beach season, the board asked for us to present more information and more data points, more about like a 10-year review of what that looks like, so we could have a discussion about, you know, do we look at going back to previous model that we used before COVID, or to just get a better view of overall what, where we've come from and what that data looks like. So you would have seen in your packet, we put together as best we could the data over the last 10 years. Not this is a lot to look at. We were able to, which wasn't included in your packet, we were able to figure out the daily visits to non-residents. We added it in here, it wasn't in the packet. Before 2017, we didn't have any real computers at the beach. So that was obviously a new initiative, and it was very hard to track attendance. So that, again, we did the best we could to put this in here. We tried to also do a good job here of like project, kind of showing out and demonstrating the 10-year revenue for the beach and give a little bit of context here. So in 2014, gross revenue was $240,000. This year it was $347,000. We also added in for context what the daily fees changed to, so the board just sees that those price increases probably helped with additional revenue. So you can see, obviously, the trend is up, after our peak being in 2021 when we sold 8,600 passes. It was a lot. We also did the same thing for total visits. We did it from 2017 on because we had accurate data. And before that, we just were able to kind of back out how many daily visits there were. So a couple of things we noticed when we went through this. If you look at 2017, total resident visits were just under 6,000. This last year, just under 12,000. Total non-resident visits in 2017 were just under 10,000. This year are just under 9,000. A couple of things just to also point out, just going back to the comment from the public earlier, is that 2014, 2015, 2016, when prices were very, very reasonable before we made those increases, you were seeing 11,500, 14,000, 19,000 visits from non-residents on the daily fees, and you're seeing about somewhere by 2,700 to 3,200 residents on dailies. Once we made some adjustments to fees in 2017, you saw those dailies, you know, obviously weather impacts that drop off a little bit as the price went up, and then obviously as we went to the new model, you saw the dailies drop off as people bought passes. So, looking at the total visits, it's a little hard, but if you look at, say, 2017, total visits there was 15,000, 17,000, 21,000, 51,000 in COVID, 32,000, 17, and 20. Really, the average visits has stayed about the same, but when you go down there, it feels like there's less people. And what that to us, anecdotally, is pass holders tend to go for a lot shorter time. When you're paying to go to the beach for the day, you stay 10 hours, you bring a cooler, you grill out, you do all of those things. So that has some impact on the operation. In the survey, we also asked the pass holders if they were satisfied with the number of people at the beach. 96% said they were, for what it's worth. And then we asked them if they the beach was limited admission on weekday mornings, weekend, and holidays to season pass holders. Did you like the submission model? 92% said yes. And then the Glencoe Park District was currently assessing options for next season. Please pick the option you like best. 75% said to keep it its current structure. 17 said admission fees and season passes at all times. And 7% said other. We also were including it, as you know, in the comprehensive plan survey that's going out to the community. And obviously this is skewed by people who bought the dates. We did present this whole report to the Lakefront Advisory last month, and a similar discussion about the fee pass options. And after some dialogue, the advisory did not want to make a change our current model. So we just wanted to share that with the board. There was some concerns around it. We did about changing it or wanting to change it. We talked about some complexities around that. And it turned out that there was no real desire to change. A lot of residents really like what that's their feedback. So I'd open up to the board for any discussion, any questions, any clarifications on past or daily fee discussion for next year.
I think you guys all know how I feel, because I've said it for many years. As probably the exclusion of Mr. Public over there, I'm probably at the beach more than the average person, and probably more than many people here. It pains my heart on a Saturday afternoon when the beach is not crowded to see a family that simply cannot afford $260 or $280 in season pass fee turned away from our beach. I think it's not only the wrong thing to do, I think it puts our staff at a tough position. I see them out there having to turn away a family that wants to enjoy nature's beautiful scenery. And I would push strong to figure out a better compromise. I heard Andre's thoughts on this from the public, and I agree that we don't want it to be too crowded, but I do think that there's other ways to do this, whether that's having admission after 3 p.m. when it tends to be a little bit quieter, whether that's temperature-based, whether that's limited day passes so that at least some people can have access to it. I would push strongly for that, because that also incentivizes people to buy the season pass holders, season passes. I think that sense of urgency is probably needed to push people to buy that season pass, but I just think it's wrong on days where we can absorb a few hundred more people to turn them away. I don't think it's an option to go to other beaches. I don't think that's right to send them away. I think if you look at parallels in today's society about us pushing people away, it breaks my heart. And I would strongly urge that we think about a way to let people have limited access on the weekends to our beaches. I realize I'm also an outlier, but I'm okay with that.
Are you talking about a day specifically where we are at low capacity, or if we're at high capacity during one of these times?
Yeah.
Are you saying then maybe then we push for something like 3 o'clock or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think... looking at the average numbers there, where you're hitting, we only hit like 300 or 400. This summer was a bad summer weather. But when you have good summers, yeah, your averages are 500 or 600 on some of those days. I think the capacity is there, and I think that we could adjust our policy based on the capacity. I realize that's confusing for our staff. But I also think it's pretty brutal for our staff, and I don't know if any of you go there and watch. I watch it. I sit there and look at it. On a day when it's not that sunny and there's 200 people there, and you're turning away a family that wants to go play at the beach, I think that's wrong. I think I understand a simple policy is better, but I also don't love us turning away people when we have to do it. I also believe strongly in a sense of I get something for this pass, right? So if I have the pass, I can go anytime, any day, I'm never going to be turned away. And I think we should keep that. And I think there's ways to offer limited day passes. It brings us extra revenue. It lets people have access to it on those cloudier days. And we don't have this carte blanche. I'm sorry, there's only 50 people down the beach, but you and your 3 kids can't come appreciate it. I just think that's wrong.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of complexities to
to the beach, and I like the idea of trying to get more people there, but we're in a dynamic time. I think you have to wait until you get closer to the summer to look at things, and I've had discussions about the security issues that everyone faces, and I suspect between now and summer we're going to see somewhere in this country some very scary security things. So there's a school of thought that says you want to be very careful about increasing access to a variety of people you don't know who aren't residents. Residences during a time where there's a need for higher security. So, you know, maybe everyone gets comfortable for the summer, and maybe my suggestion is that in a few years, if it were May and we're thinking of implementing this, I would be opposed just because I'm probably the most extreme in terms of concern about security.
I mean, I agree. I'm concerned about security. However, I also agree with you on that too. I mean, I'm definitely interested / open to hearing policy recommendations to, especially on how we can work it out with low capacity days to allow, you know, others on the beach, especially low income or those who can't afford it, you know, to bring their kids home.
I guess our biggest concern of if we say 3 o'clock and there's less than 500 people there, how do we have a 15, 16, 17-year-old enforce that? You know what I mean? So if they like black and white, like we'll let people in at 3 o'clock. It's harder for them if at 3 o'clock there's 600 people. This family came because we advertised maybe we'll bring them at 3 o'clock, and then all of a sudden they have to, you know, turn and let it in. It's not as easy as you think to navigate for that. Okay. It's almost clearer to no daily passes on weekends than saying, okay, sometimes we are and sometimes we aren't. You know, if we went to that model, it would have to be every day at 3 o'clock we let daily passes in. It couldn't be the wishy-washy, oh, I think there's, you know, because someone's going to argue with them, oh, there's only 475 and let me in type thing. So it's really, really hard. It's not really an easy way to do that. And believe me, we've toyed it in our minds, like how can we, because we hear that argument, how can we make that work if it's not at capacity? Or if you say 500 distance round, sometimes we're not even at that, what can we do? And I don't know how we train our young staff to make that kind of game time decision without getting even more beat up by the public because they don't agree with them on that decision.
I think you can make reservations online, Lisa. I think you can say, you know, you can, I agree, we want to make it simple. I think, you know, from sitting there and watching on days where it's cloudy, watching a 15-year-old turn away a family of five.
Well, I hear you.
For no other reason than it's our policy. It's just a difficult situation. I think that the people at the beach who do an amazing job, and I think Marty and I think you guys have all, like, very, very well. I think we can think about better ways. We could do, you know, up to 100, up to, say, 200 tickets sold, or not tickets, reservations will take in advance online, and then you can always tell the people at the beach, hey, listen, we do daily passes, you have to buy them online. If there's unavailable, they're unavailable. If you want to buy them in advance, you can buy them up to 48 hours in advance, something like that. I'm going to push you guys, I'm going to push you hard to think of a way to do this. And then, you know, we could always say out there, there's at least 200 available on Saturdays and Sundays. And then if the weather is bad, you can increase it to 300 or 400. You probably won't get the demand, but you can increase it. I think I'm going to push you to be creative. Think of a way.
Unless
the other board members outvote me, and I'm only one man, but I'm going to push for creativity.
Would there be any refund if the weather was bad?
No.
No.
That's why you do 48 hours in advance. You kind of have a good idea of you know, you open it up 48 hours in advance. And if people want to, and that helps out the people too. Like, they go online, they see it, they buy it. Whether it's bad, it's there. I think if the beach is closed because of bacteria, maybe we do refunds. But I think we can also put out there a policy that makes sense. There's no difference than you go to the beach at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, you bypass, and then all of a sudden lightning comes and you close the beach at 11 a.m. You know, I don't think you give out refunds in that case, do you?
It depends. If somebody just checks in, we do a rain check. But
so I mean, there's a policy for refunds, it sounds like. This one to me, it just feels, it feels like we're taking the easy road, and I understand that, and I know it's for our staff.
It's not easy. This is none of this.
It's easier for our staff to say this is the policy. You know, it's a simpler thing. But
so one of the outcomes that may come if we looked at something like that is reduced revenue. At this time, we have people because they want access. So if the pass suddenly doesn't become that valuable, right, to pay the daily, and you have a bad summer or they don't use it, what ends up happening as a consequence, regardless of any, you may have more people with less revenue. So I'm just putting that out there. That is likely what would happen. I would say that you will not see more revenue. Not disagreeing on the attendance, I'm just saying is I don't think you'll see additional revenue. I think you'll see less revenue.
And you might have additional expenses because staff. So.
But I think you have, that's where the errands of the world come in and figure out how do we market this? How do we say, like, the only way to guarantee yourself a spot on the beach is a season pass. It's the only way, and I think there's some marketing to be done. That being said, I will leave it up to you.
Bart had a valid concern, and this meeting is the best time to discuss security at the beach, but made me feel very insecure.
Just remember.
It's great economics, but in the long term, I agree with Michael, I would like to open it up. In the short term, I would absolutely vote against opening up on weekends to day passes.
But can we have update at a future meeting just about security at the beach? Because I would be interested in what your thoughts are, because it just...
We absolutely can, and you have to understand that the beach is very vulnerable, and there's nothing we can do besides having armed security guards at the entrance, and that wouldn't make it secure at all, because someone could take them out. It is just like our special events, and just like our camp, it's vulnerable. It's open to the community. They're down there, and Jordan can tell you, they can look down the bluff. I guess it's a little more obvious when someone's bringing in, you know, a coat full of guns, but there could be someone with a beach bag. We don't necessarily go through every container. You know, we kind of look for alcohol usually, but it's vulnerable.
There's a million nightmare scenarios.
Yeah, a million.
I think
elevated position, someone or the
other. Yeah, I don't want to do
something.
Someone coming off the water.
You're looking at a soft target, open space. You're just not going to be able, outside of armed guards on the beach.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to, quote unquote, secure it. This is where you have to teach the public and preach to the public as well as the staff. Situational awareness.
See something, yep.
People have to take their own security kind of in their own hands, in a sense of keep your eyes open. If something looks weird, you report it. Staff should have should know what, you know, who they have to call or whatever.
Yep.
Or you call, obviously, an emergency 911. Or you, if you don't feel comfortable, you report it and you get the hell out. I mean, there's...
But it's hard to get the hell out.
Easy. No, I know. But also, it is what it. There's so few ways that are within budget that you could actually, quote unquote, secure the beach. That being said, I agree with you on what you're saying. However, the caveat I'm going to throw out to you on that is, if someone wants to get down there to do harm, a 16-year-old kid at the top of the stairs isn't going to stop.
And I'll also put this out there, and it's very sad to say, but the two most recent mass events in the history of our community were by local residents.
Yep.
So I don't think it's a resident versus non-resident issue. I think you're open up. I think it's a vulnerable place. We will do the best that we can. But I think if you look at Highland Park, or you look at the school shooting in Winnetka, 20, 30 years ago, whenever that was, local residents. It's not a resident versus non-resident issue. And I think the one way to do it is to reduce your volumes. I think reducing volumes does help. But I don't think it matters if it's resident or non-resident. I think those days are gone, unfortunately.
So, not surprising, I have a different perspective, and that is, I would be horrified if something happened anywhere in the United States, and even worse in this area. But if there's somebody who's going to go and create an event, I would prefer that we had more safety measures in place, like no outsiders on the weekends, no day passes, and tragic as it may be, they go to the beach and sell day passes on Christmas Sunday. That's my point.
I struggle with your philosophy that we are more susceptible to outsiders than we are to our own. I think that's I don't agree with that philosophy.
Even if it's looking tough, you're down to the beach.
I'm just gonna again say the same thing. I don't necessarily agree or disagree with your philosophy or your philosophy. It doesn't matter if it's an outsider or an insider. I think you're missing the bigger picture that a high schooler at the top of the stairs is gonna stop somebody from doing something bad if they want to. And that is the unfortunate reality that I think you have to really realize at this point. We have what high school is the average
16, 15.
I mean, they're not going to be able to stop someone who wants to do harm.
Right. Whether they're buying a pass, whether they're paying daily, it's not going to stop them at all.
Yeah. Right. We don't have these issues, quite frankly, with the mud run. Or with the Boo Bash, or with July 4th, where
you
say we're not.
We worry about those.
Sorry. Yeah. What I'm saying is we don't close those off to outsiders.
But we have police. We have
police.
We do not have police at the Boo Bash.
We didn't really. We had someone, but that's not.
Yeah.
We trained staff on situational awareness.
My point is we can't.
Yeah.
If we want to lower the volumes, to lower the volumes, I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine if that's the philosophy. I don't necessarily think that selecting residents versus non-residents because of a safety issue, I would struggle with that because I think, unfortunately, again, the past two times we've had tragedies in this community were by residents. I struggle with that.
May I entertain a possibility that we just have a daily cap for attendance at the beach? Except for if you're a pass holder, you can go in. Set a daily cap.
That's what I think would make sense.
And then you can control the volume of people. Also set the cap low enough to make it incentivize being a pass holder.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Just to make it so like you don't want to get turned away. Make it low enough, but high enough. That you're not, you have a cloudy 70 degree day and you're not necessarily turning away people. Something like that I think might be a compromise, but Bart, I see your concerns, which is why I want to have a bigger conversation, just because I feel like a better steward of the community if I understood the situation better, and I totally see your point, but I want to know what, I'd rather have a bigger conversation about that, but I do think that it could, even if you can't really prevent resident versus non-resident, somebody could even be at the top of the bluff and create great harm. So I don't think we can stop somebody. We don't know who the person would be or how they would enter or how it would happen.
Your best bet in this situation is to put out to the community beach safety.
See something.
Safety protocol, tips, things like that. Have a safety consultant or security consultant kind of draft up public, situational awareness kind of tips, whatever, and protocol for what you should do. If you see something suspicious, etc., you got to put security into the community's hands in certain situations. The beach would be one of those, and that would be my opinion from past experience. But
yeah, I mean,
we had security training today with our staff.
Good.
For 2 hours. Tabletops, what to do. But I agree with Jordan. That's really what probably the consultant would say, too, is just the situational awareness and training staff or public what to do. If they see something, to report it immediately so we can be ahead of it rather than reactive.
But I think we can strike some kind of compromise. I think generally, even with your security concerns, I feel like Bart, you need to that people should have a right to visit the beach. Maybe during this isolation right now, I can see why you have elevated concerns. But I also really think it's important to us to preserve the value of the season pass and to protect our revenues. And particularly, I'm looking at this operating expenses going up. I don't really see that changing. Yeah. So we do need to have a sustainable model. But I think it would be, I do agree with Michael that it would be great if we could somehow have some kind of limited compromise. And I think the best answer is to have it very simple. No.
Yeah.
Can I ask a really quick question? In the past, the board was really sensitive of having daily prices over our neighbors or competitive. So Winnetka, for example, Wilmette, Highland Park, they were very, very... So my question to you is the board opposed is if we did our daily fees would be higher than, say, Winnetka next door or Wilmette. And that way we can actually make our season passes a better value where they get to the point where two visits pay them off. So I think a family in Glencoe, if they look at that like, well, somebody I only have to go two, I'll pay it off. But that may require us to have our dailies higher than Winnetka next door. Does that make sense?
I have no problem.
Are you opposed with that?
I think that's actually... See, this is why I knew if I push you guys, you come up with creative solutions. I think if you want it, I would even, if you want to make it, 15 and 30. Look, $30 is a lot of money to visit a beach. But if you're a family of four, and we're not stopping you.
Right.
And I think it's an easier, I think people will stop themselves if it's too expensive as opposed to us having to stop them. But,
Would you ever be opposed to having a weekend rate? And I don't know how. I don't even know how hard it is to train staff on a daily rate, because we want people to come dailies during the week when it's kind of slower, right?
Right. I would actually. So you're speaking. So you go to security for him, come to me for revenue management. I mean, there's no reason why you can't have like a $5 and $10 fee on weekdays and a $20 and $30 fee on weekends.
We don't want to do that because then people won't buy the passes. So we don't want to get too wily.
Yeah,
but if we keep them the same as now and then raise weekends to 15
30?
And 30 or something like that, and that way we'd push people to buy.
Well, let me ask. So if I remember correctly, years back, in things, residents versus non-residents, we were getting more non-residents versus residents, and the number of residents has gone up a lot. Do we know what's driving?
A lot of it is COVID driven.
So, well, why residents are attending? They like the experience and the feedback.
Do we know if it's we're getting a younger demographic moving in, more kids, more
it's
families?
Density. The anecdotal, constant feedback is they like how many people are at the beach. And I think one of the consequences is of growing the number of people at the beach, just again, independently, and growing the attendance at the beach will probably result in less residents going to the beach, in my opinion, because we saw that pre-COVID. You see 6,000 visits pre-COVID to 11,500 for almost, for symptoms. This one here. So you can see pretty clearly, the number of residents was residents were not going to the beach.
Right.
And this was when our passes were much more expensive for an individual back in 2015.
Maybe you cap the sales at a low number and raise the fee.
I don't think we have to solution it today, I hope. Do we have to solution today?
No. We can come back with something.
Yeah, maybe you know, either we do have a committee meeting, you can do it one-on-one with us over the next couple of weeks. But let's see if we can, look, I am not, if we end up where we end up now, at the very least, we have an opportunity for our 15, 16, 17-year-olds to say, look, I'm sorry, the beach is, you know, beach is full. We require a season pass for the weekends, come back Monday through Friday. At least we have something to say, you know, come back. It's not, you know, catastrophic. I'm just wondering if we can do incrementally better. And so let's put our heads together and think about how to do that. Okay.
One question. So, consistent with my earlier comment is, I don't know if this is a great time to be trying to draw people to the and I think, I've seen this promoting events by the library recently, I think we're trying to keep a little bit lower, but where would the daily weekend passes be announced that it's available? Is it just a sign at the beach? Is it on our website? Is it on the newspaper? I mean, how broadly is this?
That's a good question. Honestly, we would have to think about that carefully. I'm not sure we would go to the traditional marketing we would have done pre-COVID.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to accommodate people who would like to be here and they've been here before, as opposed to saying, hey, let's increase our residents and traffic, so do a broad announcement.
I personally think it's almost a little bit like the fireworks, where it happens. If you really want to search for it, you can find it, but we don't have to broadcast throughout society, hey, come see our fireworks. I would imagine that, you know, depending on what the policy ends up being, I think we can figure out how to market it. I don't think we have to, Bart, go and put a billboard in the city of Chicago saying, come to Glencoe Beach. That's not what I think any of us want. But on the other hand, I also don't want to, if it was only, you know, you want it somewhere written down what it is so that these kids who are at the beach can say, our policy's online, and you can see it. So you can't have it too hidden, I don't think, but you certainly don't want to put it on a billboard in the city of Chicago.
I like the idea of daily only online, purchasing them only online, to make them,
something like that I think could help, because this way, you know,
it hits a cap.
And it's 2023, like, people do everything online. You know, it will also train our...
You still have concern with people turning up, not being able to purchase at the beach. There's language barriers, and there's concerns with that, too. Staff's big concern is more people, less revenue, higher expense, and residents not being engaged with the beach. That's the staff's concern.
I think there's a... Again, if we go back to a model like this, it is by far not the end of the world. Our neighbors can access our beach Monday through Friday.
We don't need to make a decision. We need to have a decision by January.
So let's go back and we'll try to brainstorm some ideas and talk to you
And what I get is, this isn't about driving more revenue. We definitely don't want to have our revenue decline. It's just about the spirit of our inclusive community.
It's a lot of
access and natural resource, I'm sure.
It's about with safety, with maintaining engagement with the community, making the residents still driven to come, while somehow trying to find a way to be open to, people from outside.
There's a compromise here. Yeah, I don't know where it is, but there is something. And again, if we fall back on this, I think...
Okay, we'll come back to you. We'll discuss that next committee.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Can I make one last comment?
Sure.
I think paradigms are different this time from the past. I think you may have had local people who had centralized problems and caused events. I think in this environment we're facing, people are coming from outside.
Sorry, I didn't catch that last part.
Driving and violence here, and it's well documented that it's certain communities that would be targets for the moment.
not, I don't think it's individuals who have psychological issues. I think the risks are different.
I don't think anyone would argue that with you either.
It's a fair point.
Okay, next, Northbrook agreement.
So now we're going to just take a look at our Northbrook agreement review. So this past year, when the addition was the access to the dog park at resident rates, the restaurant resident rates for Glencoe residents into the two Northbrook pools, as well as all their aquatic programming, and the Northbrook residents get the resident rates for Glencoe Beach. As you can see here, the green is the early bird rates that Glencoe residents would receive based on, you know, household size. So, and then obviously the regular fees go up slightly. So it's like a kind of ballpark amount. And then looking at the past data itself, comparing last year to this year, dip in overall revenue on our end from $55,000 plus to $48,000 plus. And the total, while the number of visits actually went up, so obviously our resident revenue by visit went down a little bit. In Northbrook pools, the amount of local residents who purchased those, the revenue stayed about the same. The revenue visit was the same. As far as the past numbers comparison goes, 97 pool pass were purchased last year, so includes their 10 splash pass option, and 87 were purchased this year. With less visits to the Northbrook pools. And then on the beach side, obviously we saw another dip there in the number of passes that were purchased by the we also saw an increase in number of visits to the beach by those Northbrook residents. As far as Northbrook Dog Park, Devil went 36 total passes were sold to utilize that Northbrook Dog Park. $60 for the first dog and $30 for each, they needed to purchase the ability to let the dog come in as well. We'll open up for any agreement discussion.
Is the board comfortable with us moving forward to renew the agreement going forward for 2024? Or is there any further discussion you'd like to have or clarification?
I'd like to know what you think.
We would like to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We think it's a great.
I think it's a benefit for both residents.
We get additional use of their pool for our staff training, which is, this is a small benefit, but it is a nice benefit.
It's a nice benefit.
I would be a hypocrite if I said I was against this and for what I liked before. So I, if you don't mind.
I think we have a consensus to move forward with it.
Okay. The next one is prior to the pandemic. Oh, there we go. We offered complimentary passes for our partners in the village, which would be library, school, village hall, and Glencoe Family Services, all who provide a great assistance to us in many different ways. So we feel it's time to reinstitute that back in to allow complimentary passes for the beach for the employee only. We believe this may also drive them to have purchase passes for their family members.
Yeah, or guest passes.
Or guest passes.
They would get it. They work more than 30 hours a week, but we could fine tune the details.
Yeah.
As someone, I think three out of four of us have little ones that take advantage of a lot of these library and school services. I think all of us take advantage of the village services. I think this is a great idea. It's a good offering at an incredibly low sort of cost to us. I don't think these folks are probably buying the passes too much. I don't think we're going to lose a lot of
revenue. There's one or two residents. I would say there's a handful of residents who were taking advantage. But if you look at the school, there was eight passes given complimentary. Of the eight passes, there was only 14 total visits.
Right.
So, you're not seeing really park district staff, the one you'd be utilizing for months. You're not seeing people.
No. It's nice because they can go for lunch.
Yeah.
So we don't allow people just to go down for lunch. So if they're on a break, they go down for lunch. We see more of that happening, actually using our services. So it's just a nice wait for them to get away during the week. Yeah. We don't see them using a lot on the weekends because they don't want to really.
I would suggest if we're going to do it, we don't do it for a year. We kind of try to say, hey, this is going to be our philosophy for a longer period. Because
yes.
Taking it away,
it's really hard.
It's a really sour taste in people's mouth. Even if they don't utilize it, they know they can utilize it.
Yeah. It's kind of like our fitness center. We offer it, they like it. Not many people utilize that. So that's what I recommend. It's not just because your kids go to school there, but our relationship with the school, is phenomenal. Right now they're letting us use the space free of charge for our after-school program while I was in construction. I mean, we need a gym, we call it, we get it. Village, we need a piece of equipment, we call it, we get it. So that's public safety. Can you come to our Halloween event? Because we're going to have 1,000 people here. Yes, we'll be there and we'll have cars sitting there. That kind of thing. So those kind of things go a long way. Not only that, but then the community gets to see the facility. They know the people in the community. People like to see their teacher or their police officer or whatever. So it's a no-brainer to us to add that back in.
I love this idea. I think this is the right thing to do.
This doesn't have to have a vote. We just want the consensus that you want to move forward with that. And then we would inform them. Is there any, so then we're going to another one because it's not really aquatics, but is there any appetite to do this for our fitness center also, not free? I would not recommend this free because we're too small, but offer them maybe a 50% discount on our resident rates.
Sure. I love it.
Sure. It's not crowded in here.
It's not crowded, and you know, I think a small majority, again, this would be one of those things like, hey, come check this out and, you know, see the facility and, you know.
I think, look, the school's not going to do it because I think they have access to their own center at Central, which is probably your biggest employer. And that school, the gym at Central is, I don't know if you have seen it, it is fabulous. But I think you're, for the library, for the village.
Family services, they really appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, I want our cops working out and being healthier.
They have a gym also, but you know.
Man. No, I think it's great.
I think our librarians would love it.
They would love it. Our librarians would love it. So
we have a handful of village employees that have joined the fitness center.
Yeah.
But they do it because they want to come to the open gym early morning before they go to work.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Well, it's good to recruit people to Glencoe. We want people to work here.
Yep.
Yep. I think it's right.
Great. Great. Okay, we'll go ahead with that and we'll let them, we'll then notify them. All right, I think that was it.
That's everything we have.
Thank you for listening to my ranting. I know some people in the public may not necessarily agree with everything, but I do appreciate having the opportunity to speak about it.
All right. For other business, really I just wanted Kyle to give just a really brief update on the status of the ramp for the going down the beach and the Weinberg Family Recreation Center progress.
Thank you, Lisa. So with the Lost Stabilization Project, we're entering the phase where the ramps will be ripped up starting like on Friday. So from Friday until the week of Thanksgiving, we expect to have no access available by the public to the beach via the lower ramp. We've communicated via social media as well as directing people to use the stairs via the Hazel ramp to access the beach during that period of time. After the U.S. all goes down, that will pretty much result in a substantial completion of the project, some minor items thereafter. The Weinberg Family Recreation Center, we're about 2.5 weeks away from opening day. Only recently, you'll see the exterior is largely complete. The construction fence is coming down on Thursday. The interior is coming together nicely. We've seen a lot of progress here over the past few weeks. We got a couple of inspections we have to line up to get ourselves occupancy, but we're getting ready here to open up in 2.5 weeks and excited to see the final product very soon.
We're excited too.
If anybody would like to see a tour next couple weeks, please let us know and we'll be happy to walk you through it.
Just at 10:30 tomorrow, there's actually a couple of staff coming over with me, so
there you go, tomorrow 10:30. But if you need it after hours or something like that, we'll be happy to walk you through that. That's it. That's all we have today.
Okay. All right. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. meeting adjourned.
Thank you. All right.